This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's Q&As. It's Wednesday afternoon. I got to do it a day early again just because I want to try to get some more live streams done this week, and I want to try to get as much behind the scenes work done on a few upcoming projects that are kind of massive, bigger scope than I would normally take on. So hopefully those will all be ready by summer and I could have some more cool content to share with you. But let's see what we got this week. I'm expecting not everybody had the time to get their questions in, but hopefully there's still going to be a good chat, and I'll obviously cover up or follow up next week with anything that I missed. So let's jump in. I want to start out by finally getting the true answer to the question of what happened with Koala Koa's Xtron Crosspoint setup. We'd gone back and forth a couple times, I sent him some cables to try, and we talked about it here on the Q&A, and what actually happened makes perfect sense, but it was really weirding me out when I first heard it. So let me just kind of tell the story from the beginning, because I think other people who listened were like, that also doesn't make sense. So Koala had an RGB SCART cable from a Sega Saturn that he plugged into an Xtron Crosspoint, and it wouldn't work. It would work directly into the RetroTINK and all the other scalers. It would work directly into an RGB monitor, but not through the Crosspoint. So that one for me, I was like, I bet you it's sync on Luma. And that is exactly what it was. So I had sent him a sync on C-Sync cable just to try to make sure. And that also worked fine. I'd also sent Koala one of the Retro Gaming Cable's component video cables, and he mistaked that for the BNC cable that he had. So when he said the Retro Gaming Cable's one that I'd sent didn't work, he was actually talking about an RGBS BNC cable from Retro Gaming Cables, and that syncs on Luma as well. So the component video cable I sent, I'm not sure if you had a chance to try it or not yet, but it absolutely worked for me. So there's no possible reason that shouldn't work through the Crosspoint. But that was the confusion. I thought he was talking about the component video cable that I had sent, and he was talking about the BNC cable he had. So at the moment, if you're looking to get those cables for use with an Xtron Crosspoint, the ones Retro Gaming Cables have on their page will not work. I just asked Rob to add a disclaimer to those pages for now, and then when the next batch is made, hopefully he'll make those with sync on C-Sync, so this just won't be an issue anymore. But I definitely wanted to clarify, because there were a ton of people in the comments that were very awesomely and nicely chiming in, but also making the point of like, what are you talking about? It works fine. It's always worked fine. So that's exactly what I thought as well. So I'm so glad we got to the bottom of that. It was just very simply a misunderstanding with which cable he was talking about, and that both of those cables were sync on Luma, not C-Sync. So we got Koala totally straightened out. He's got the sync on C-Sync cable. I took the sync on Luma cable for me, and I had been making a mistake. I had said sync on Luma cables will not work with the latest Retro Castle cases. They will. You just have to flip the dip switch number one to on, and that's it. In fact, you could leave dip number one on even if you're using a sync on C-Sync cable. So this whole bump in the road ended up being a perfect learning experience for all of us. We got that straightened out with Rob. We got that straightened out with Koala setup. And I learned that the Retro Castle cases that I showed and talked about in that video will actually work with sync on Luma cables. So if you got one of those from Rob at Retro Gaming Cables, the only thing you have to do is flip the dip switch on the outside. You don't even need to open it up. You literally just turn it to the side and you flip the dip to one or number one to on, and that's it. So while this was kind of of confusing for a while because I couldn't figure out what was quite going on. This was a worthy experiment to have, and I'm really glad we found the solid answers to everything because it's not, I mean, we're nerds. It's not just about the fix. We need to know why the fix worked. Otherwise, we're not going to be happy. That's just how we roll. So very, very cool that we got that. Thanks to Koala for doing all this troubleshooting and testing with me and not just going, I'm tired of testing. I'll buy another cable. Like, it was really cool that we learned why, and now I get to share it with everybody who listens. So thanks again, and I guess let's move on with this week's Q&A. Next up, a couple of questions from Rob. First, they're looking into getting their first gaming 4K TV, and they were wondering if I had any model recommendations. They saw the My Life in Gaming episode about the different LG C1 and C2, and was wondering if I heard anything about the C3 or C4, and if it improved anything on the previous models. So I have a good amount of experience with modern OLEDs. I have never used mini LED, those newer ones that are coming out, but out of everything I've seen, those LG OLEDs are still by far my go-to for basically everything. And I do believe there's still models that could be available in 50-inch, because you did mention a little bit below that you can't do anything larger than 50. So I believe LG, maybe the lowest might be 55, so you might have to look for a leftover C2 or C3, but you could definitely get them in smaller sizes like that. And their performance for me has just been absolutely awesome. Every year they get brighter, so that's certainly something to take into consideration if that's an issue for you. That is the one thing, the two things that I've heard about mini LED TVs are that they could be brighter. So if you're in a room with a ton of windows and you like to watch during the daytime, that could be an issue. And there's less image retention, which is only, in my opinion, a problem is if you're going to use it as a PC monitor. So you have it on 8 hours a day and you leave your Mac or Windows or Linux taskbar going at the bottom, that could absolutely burn in on an OLED and there would be much less of a chance of that happening on mini LED TVs. But unless those two factors are very important to you, those are really the only two reasons right now I would buy any of those others. I would always go with an LG OLED based on all the performance things that I've seen. Now, Mark did find some issues with 4x3 that were very weird on the C2, I believe. But if you're using a scaler like the Tink 4K that you said you're planning to run, that's not going to be an issue because you're just going to be sending it 1080p 120 or 4K 60. So that's not really an issue whatsoever anymore. And the only other thing would be how the LG OLED handles BFI for certain scenarios. And that would really, you know, that's something where you should just try both. If you're going to be doing a lot of watching of older movies, or if you want a 35 millimeter film projector emulation, just run it in 1080p. Or I mean, if you're going Blu-ray, you're going 1080p in anyway, but 1080p into the Tink and output 1080p 120. And that could handle, or 96 for the film emulation. And that should be able to handle everything. If you're going in with, if you need 4K 120, then try them both. See what looks better. See if you use your TV's BFI with the Tink with the CRT filters in 4K, or if you just let the Tink do the BFI at 1080p 120 and then let the TV scale to 4K. That's just kind of something that you're going to want to experiment. And it might actually be different based on your use case. Maybe certain games would look better in one way, but certain movies would be in the other. You also said you were looking to run PS5 and PC as well. The only thing that you would need to worry about with all of this is make sure that you have HDMI switches that are compatible with everything. So if you're running PS5 in 120 hertz in your PC, you're obviously going to want to run that through a switch that's compatible. And Beast the other day actually messaged me after one of these Q&As and said he's been using a switch that worked well. So I'll leave a link for you for that. But that would allow you to get multiple 4K 120 devices into the TV and then just run all of your other devices that max out at 1080p, run those right through the Tink 4K, including a Blu-ray player. And Blu-ray players are so cheap these days. You can go to a used thrift store and get one for $5. So as long as it has the capabilities of doing 1080p 24, which I think all of them do, you could just get a separate player, one for UHD and then one for Blu-rays, and just run the 4K one through, or just use your PS5 for Ultra HDs, but you could run that through the other switch as well. And then you could run everything else through the Retro Tink. And then you would just really need to worry about audio splitting, which is something I'm still working on because all of the chipsets of the newer devices are kind of weird and they have compatibility issues with everything, not just the tink. So you'll be in a situation where some things work perfect, others don't. It's really annoying, and I'm still trying to work through it, but I don't have the budget to just buy 100 different things, and I don't want to get my Amazon account shut down for buying 100 HDMI adapters and returning every one of them. So I'm kind of in a bit of a weird place with that. But your setup is 100% doable, and you don't really need a lot more stuff. You could just get that HDMI switch, and then the only thing to worry about would be if you're running Dolby Atmos through the RetroTINK 4K. If you're not, it's not a problem anyway. So yeah, that's basically it. I mean, getting an LG OLED and using what you're talking about is going to be an amazing combination. And the only thing I would have added, but you already said it anyway, is that's the time you'll want to spend the money on a Tink 4K as opposed to the 5X or anything else. And I mean that with respect to the 5X, to the OSSE Pro, to the Morph. I mean, all the respect to those other scalers, but if you're about to spend a lot of money on a really good TV, you're going to want to get everything you can out of it. And the CRT emulation filters and all of the stuff you could do with movies with the Tink 4K, it's just, I mean, there's a reason it's so expensive, right? And people get really upset when I say stuff like that, but I'm just being honest, so whatever. But yeah, I think you're making the right move there, because if you said I'm getting an LCD TV on a budget, or I still have an awesome 1080p plasma, I would respectfully say there is no reason to get a Tink 4K. The 5X should do everything you need, unless you're working on stuff that's not really compatible with the 5X, then the OSSC Pro would be badass. Or if you're getting a 1440p gaming monitor, either of those two would be really awesome, but you're spending the money on a really, really good TV, so get the processor to match. You already are, Rob. I'm just, for everybody else listening, I'm trying to add some perspective. So I think you're making the right choice, and I guess that was a really long way of saying yes to all of the things that you, all the questions you had. The other thing that you asked about was, has there ever been talk about making firmware or hardware modifications to larger consumer TVs to do things like improve or stabilize output or add features? Yes, Zeiss did it. Zeiss works. Zeiss did it with a couple of LCD panels, a Samsung, Dell, I think that also used Samsung panels in there. And also I forgot the name of the Seiki TV, I believe, but he was able to modify a 4K 50-inch LCD TV to get zero latency, like 0.01 milliseconds, and to get different scaling options. And if you wanted to drop it down to 480p, you could get up to 480 hertz refresh rate. So it was absolutely awesome in every way, except you have all of the shortcomings of building custom hardware for a TV. And don't forget, I mean, while we're often frustrated with these TV manufacturers, these are huge companies with giant budgets and a team of engineers making stuff to work on these things. So the fact that Zeiss was able to do it basically by himself was really impressive, but to do it for all or for multiple things would be really, really hard. And of course, everybody asked him about, can you do this for LG OLEDs? But one of the problems with that is there's multiple panels. So if you see HDTV Test, I'm a giant fan of Vincent and that channel, but he'll always talk about how some of the LG OLEDs, you might get an MLA panel or you might not. So for somebody like Zeiss to go in and tell you, here's a kit to upgrade your OLED for zero input latency and some other features, I mean, he'd have to buy like 20 grand worth of TVs just to be able to see if it's even possible and start modifying equipment. And then you would have to open your TV before even ordering to make sure. And there's a lot of things involved that I just don't think that that's going to be viable. What I do think would be if a gaming company just bought a bunch of panels from LG and made their own driver board. So they basically did all, everything Zeiss did, but instead of trying to work with things that are already on the market, you know, telling LG, okay, I want 5,000 of this type of panel. And then when it arrives, you make your hardware around that, and then you sell it as a complete package. And when those run out, you do it again and make any hardware change that you need. But that would require a lot of capital and the same amount of development that Zeiss did. So no one, it would be hard to find somebody willing to pony up a couple of million bucks to hope that gamers would want to spend $5,000 on a 77-inch and a 65-inch zero latency TV with essentially like a RetroTink built in or something. Most people would say, why don't I just buy an off-the-shelf one with an LG warranty, get a RetroTink 4K, and then just deal with the latency differences and some of the things to work around, which they're not very laggy anymore. So that's an excellent question and something that I think about quite often. But it all comes down to the logistics and most importantly, money. Like, is somebody willing to lose $1 million if this all goes wrong? Or if they do all of this and LG the next year comes out with the same exact thing because they saw your idea and thought, we could just do that. So I understand why it's not done, but it is frustrating because there could be a lot of very neat open source community things that you could do around TVs like that. So good questions, Rob. Sorry I rambled, but those are, you know, fun things to talk about. Next up, DK Devil has been putting together a fairly extensive retro handheld console collection, and they've run into a snag with everything more recent than Game Boy Advance, swelling batteries. Are there any reliable battery manufacturers for all of the Sony and Nintendo handhelds? Nintendo just delisted their own first-party batteries over the weekend, and they're not sure we'll be seeing any more of them. The few third-party batteries they've purchased over the last few years have been terrible, and folks seem to agree that most of them aren't great. Yeah, that's an ongoing problem, and I think people ask about at least once a year that same question, and my answer is always the same in that keep asking every time just in case, but I haven't heard of anything that's a reliable source. And anybody that sat through that long discussion about power supplies with Renee, Zach, and Mike and I, a lot of what we talked about there applies to batteries, and it in fact could be even more dangerous, and it's just... it's one of those things where I just am so uncomfortable giving a recommendation because you would have to have batteries that are all the correct ratings. You'd have to make sure that the ratings weren't just copied from somebody who paid to get it and now they're just being sold off of AliExpress. Even if you get it from a reputable seller, how do you know they didn't accidentally buy some of the ones that are just fakes for cheap and, you know, are unknowingly presenting them as real, you know, because that happens, right? I don't care how thorough you are as a seller, as a reseller, that's going to happen at some point. You might just catch it before they go out, but it happens to everybody. So I got nothing. Does anybody at all have any kind of recommendation for that or a solid source for batteries for especially the PSP? Because those are known, even the original Sonys are known for swelling. So I would love to have a really, really good replacement. And I'd especially like even a homebrew replacement. Like, you know, we use X brand off of Amazon, which is an official thing. And it's not... you know, and then we use this homebrew kit to adapt it to. Like, I think that's probably going to be the solution most of us would go to, unless somebody's actually really making a high quality battery. I think kind of like Greg does with the Nomad Pack, where he uses those off the shelf batteries and then puts them into a case that adapts it to the Nomad and to the, you know, the other stuff that he's been working on. So I think that would probably be the where we're going to go with all of this, but I don't know. I'm just guessing. I made all that up. Those were all guesses and speculation. But if anybody knows of solid batteries to buy, please let me know. And just a polite reminder that YouTube will just delete links if you put them in the comments. It won't even go to my held for review bin. So if you have a good product, please spell out the product. And then like on Amazon or AliExpress, don't just put a URL. And even if those get flagged, they'll be in my held for review bin and I'll just release them. I check that a couple times a day. So, you know, hopefully the community could help us out with this one. Next up, Billy Retro Gamer has a JVC PVM and noticed that sometimes the green looks a little off, but only at certain times. It was noticed the most on Aztec Adventure for the Master System. The grass is way more Kentucky blue-green, so they were wondering, should they stop using it immediately and get it to a repair person? They have a backup consumer TV they could use in the meantime. So I'm going to share my opinion. So if anybody else who is a CRT expert is listening, please, if I'm wrong about this, chime in. But my personal opinion is that could be a sign of some capacitors going. It could be a sign of the tube maybe needing some calibration. It could be nothing. It could just be an older TV where you need to readjust and recalibrate the levels over time. So I personally would not stop using it. I would just plan on having it serviced by somebody who has experience with that model JVC CRT. One thing that you could safely do is very carefully open it up. I believe those are just as open or just as serviceable from like a open it up and look in perspective as Sony PVMs, and just get a very bright flashlight and look around and see. And if you open it up and and you look in the side, or I mean, you could probably even look in through the vent holes, but if you see capacitors that are leaking and there's some like acidic looking goop underneath them, then yeah, stop using it and get it to a repair shop immediately. Otherwise, that acid is going to burn through the motherboard and it could render it completely unfixable at some point. So that's always what I would check whenever you're suspicious of some piece of electronics not working right. You know, open it up and you don't have to put your hands in. Don't worry about getting, I mean, unplug it from the wall, please, but just over the top of it, shine your flashlight in, look in the side through the vent holes, whatever you got to do, but just see if there's some obvious damage going on. And yes, of course, the fluid could be leaking underneath the capacitor and you wouldn't be able to see it with a flashlight. And that could happen, but I mean, what you're really looking for is holy crap damage. That is the time you're going to want to stop using it and try to get it repaired immediately. Otherwise, you're just not going to have a monitor anymore. But if you shine your flashlight around and it just looks like every old piece of electronics, some dust on it, nothing gooping out, or maybe it's the white glue that they use to hold larger capacitors in for shipping. So that's the goop you might see, but it's going to look like glue. You should be able to notice the difference for that one. And it would only be on the much larger capacitors. But if visually it looks okay, I would personally keep using it and just know that, hey, somebody's going to have to repair this at some point. It's probably going to be a lot of money because those JVCs have a ton of caps, but then you'll have a monitor for probably the rest of your life. So you know, assuming the tube is still in good condition, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, that's just my personal opinion, but maybe there's a JVC expert that's listening going, no, that's the sign of this. If that's the case, please chime in the comments. But my opinion is I would absolutely just keep using it as long as there's no physical damage from caps leaking, and just make a note like, hey, I love this monitor. Let me see if I can get in touch with Steve and have it on his list of repair. Or maybe if you're closer to Andy, you could have Andy do it, whatever. Get somebody who knows what they're doing and just, you know, absolutely get it refurbished and make sure that you have it lasting a long time. But I would personally be okay just to keep using it. Next up, Steven Sanders wants to know if there's any good examples out there of the Tim Worthington RGB mod deblur function in action for the N64 mod. And I think it's going to work the same as all other RGB mod hardware deblurs. So definitely check out a My Life in Gaming video or anybody who's covered it. But the one from Bordy, the one from Tim, they should all kind of work the same, really, because it's accomplishing the same thing. Same with any of the HDMI kits that offer the same functionality. So I would look through the My Life in Gaming's video catalog and see, and I'm pretty positive I remember them doing some in-depth look at this. And I also remember Mark talking about both the software deblur and the hardware deblur, as well as the differences and how they look. Maybe that was just a long conversation we had hanging out one day, but I could swear I watched a whole video on this from them, probably multiple. So I would definitely just search through the My Life in Gaming channel. I mean, at worst, you're just going to end up watching a bunch of really awesome videos anyway. So check that out and see what you could find. And if you can't find any examples, let me know again next week or something, and I'll see if I could dig any up. But I'm pretty sure they'll have you covered, and I'm pretty sure the deblur is going to be all the same. And I mean that as a compliment. I just, you know, they're all doing it right. So one example shouldn't be marginally different than another, but let me know how you make out. Hopefully you'll be able to get your answers. Next up, a couple of questions from Tom M. First, do I know where you can get the RetroCastle Mr. Cases? Because it looks like everybody is out of them and AliExpress says no longer available. So don't worry, this is just a bump in the road. First of all, Ivory is switching stores from AliExpress to another. I'm really glad he's doing that because there's such a stigma from AliExpress stuff. And I know that's not fair, right? That's like saying eBay sellers. There's a bunch of really awesome people who sell on eBay. But if you say eBay junk, everybody listening is going to know exactly what you're talking about because they've probably gotten shafted on something from eBay. So it's the same with AliExpress. So I'm really happy that Ivory is making a separate RetroCastle store for worldwide sales. It might just take a little while for him to get it back up and running, but they're not going away. No one disappeared. If you've pre-ordered one, he didn't take your money, shut down the store, and disappear. It's just, I think he's tired of dealing with the AliExpress issues. Just like here in the States, so many of my friends who sell on Amazon are really annoyed with that and probably considering not selling on Amazon anymore because the downsides seem to outweigh the benefits very often. Also with Rondo, Castlemania, those are en route right now, I believe, to him. So they'll be relisted there once they arrive. That was what I talked about last week with the whole, at the very end of last week's Q&A, about right before Chinese New Year, a lot of people got told that their shipments were coming out, but they weren't. It was just one of those, everybody got delayed. And rather than argue, all the manufacturers like, yeah, it's coming, but they weren't even ready to ship yet. So the delays were really nobody's fault this time. I know I say that quite a lot, but it's really hard being a small company or just one single person trying to make stuff. And you're working with manufacturers that are doing runs of 5, 10, 50,000 all the time. So getting your small retro gaming run done and out on time, you very often get bumped because they need that extra space and the extra time to do bigger orders. So it sucks. It is what it is. And, you know, that's why like Mike Chi refuses to do pre-orders. It's one of the many reasons, because you want to set expectations. But I don't think anybody did anything wrong in this case. I just think it's one of those, like, we all just got to be patient and wait, and that kind of sucks, but nothing else I could say about that. Second, more of a comment, but Tom wanted to say that they've been loving the Mr. Tap-2 extension. Me too. They bought some small NFC stickers and put some inside their controller, so when they want to bring up the OSD, they could just tap your controller on the reader. I didn't even think of that. That's a great, great idea. That would be a really cool way for arcade sticks as well. So that way, if your arcade stick doesn't have a dedicated button that you could use for menu, some people might not like having a button combo, so you could just like wave it over your mister. That's a great idea too. They got a bunch put in their cartridges so they could tap the cart to play the game. And they wonder if it would be possible to put one inside the Tink 4K battery compartment to switch INI file to direct video for the mister. That is interesting. So that's a pretty cool idea. So you would then take a very small NFC, not the reader, but the transmitter, instead of using one of the credit card looking things, put it inside the Tink remote, and whenever you wanted to switch to direct video, wave the remote over your reader and your mister and have it automatically switch. That's kind of cool too. I don't know. You'd have to find one small enough to fit in the battery compartment. But if you get that working, let me know. I think that would be, if you're on any social media, then definitely message me here on Patreon and I'll repost you somewhere, because that's neat. I didn't think of that either. That's kind of a fun thing. But keep it going with this weird stuff, because you're gonna hit one that's gonna make waves, right? Like when the first time I actually had one of those really nice stickers, like a Super Mario World sticker on a card, and just turned on my mister, tapped the card, and then Mario World started playing, I was like, wow, I get it now. Now I really get why people are excited by this. It's not just that neat thing. It's like, this is a fun, tactile, and easy way to launch games. You know, if you have a couple of these things lined up on your shelf and you tell your friends, go pick whatever game you want, and especially with arcade games, then you know it's already mapped to your controllers, you know everything's going to work. There is no like, oh, hold on, I got to recalibrate my setup. It's just you grab your card, you tap it, you're playing the game, and you're done. So that in itself is awesome, but there's going to be other scenarios like you talk about where tap is going to end up being even more useful than that. So that one's really cool. I like that idea. The only other thing that might work too is if you just like attach one to the end of whatever HDMI cable you're using for the RetroTINK 4K. So whenever you plug it into the mister, it's essentially like tap is telling it. I don't know. Keep going, because these are awesome. So yeah, that's really neat. But just sit tight with the Retro Castle cases. They're definitely coming. Next up, Waifu for Life said, not really video game related, but they know that I experiment with a lot of different TV devices, so they'll take a chance. They're looking to stream some local media to a secondary TV without hooking the actual TV itself to the internet or connecting a computer to it. Do I know of any good HDMI devices with built-in Ethernet that would allow them to stream different media types, including MP4 and MKV? I've been using my Apple TV for years for this. And the main reason is because my whole life, I hated having 5 devices to do very similar things when you could really accomplish it all with one, especially when there's no technical reason. So I was building Windows Media Center PCs 20 plus years ago when those things were a thing. I had a cable card reader in it, so it could be your cable box, your DVD player, your media player, and your emulation box all in one. And I tried to move away from that to get into more embedded devices. And I remember trying some Western Digital devices, some other things. And it was after VLC Media Player And I think Mr. MC, which is a port of Kodi, when those were available on the Apple TV is when I really started using it for streaming. But there's also Firecore Infuse. It's $1 a month, which is totally fair. And that even streams Dolby Atmos and Dolby Vision as well. So depending on your TV and what you would like, that might actually be your best choice. But I like the Apple TV box because if you have Apple devices, you could cast it right to your TV. It's got wireless and Ethernet built into it. If you wanted to play their games, fine. But really, just the free apps that they have for it, everything that I need to do is in there. And in fact, the only thing it doesn't do is 3D ISOs for 3D Blu-rays, which I'm like one of seven people that still enjoys those now and then. So that's, I understand. That's a hardware limitation of the Apple TV. So that's not like any of the software makers are just not doing it. I've asked them all and they've all tried and they all said it's a hardware limitation of those boxes. So other than 3D Blu-ray ISOs, that's what I would go for just because you can get them cheap. If you want to get like serious, I love those Oppo Blu-ray players. Some of my friends make fun of me because the Dune devices are out there. There's other media players that do it, but I don't know of any others that also play all discs as well up to Ultra HD, but you're going to have to find one with jailbroken firmware. So, and if you're going to spend that much money, then you might look into one of those Dune devices or one of those other ones that could do all of that. So that's why I always say start with something like an Apple TV, because for around $100, you could get started and it might just do everything. And even with some EDID spoofers, you should even be able to get it down to 480p if you needed to. So you could even watch content on a PC CRT monitor like I often do when I have football going on multiple TVs behind me. So that's what I would suggest to start out with. If you, for whatever reason, don't like Apple, a lot of people tell me NVIDIA Shields are great for all of this. I've never actually used one though. So you would have to kind of just start out on your own, and I don't know if you would need to manually install anything, whereas Apple TV, you just go to the App Store and you download the app. So for me personally, it's either that or I go to one of the more pro solutions like the Oppo, which can do 3D Blu-rays and all that other stuff, but I don't think it can do Dolby Vision, believe it or not. So it can do Atmos, but not Vision. So there's still a need for multiple devices, but that's actually something I would love to look into, is doing a device that can do absolutely everything that I need in one. And funny, you know, history repeats itself, right? I thought for sure when some of those Apple TV apps came out that I would not need any of these other devices anymore, but I still need multiple, and I'm still considering going back and doing what I did over 20 years ago and having one device for absolutely everything, including all of this. So maybe I'm going to end up building another media PC / disc player / whatever else again, like I thought I would never have to do again. But, you know, oh well, I like nerding out on this stuff. But I'd start with that and kind of see where you go. Next up, PS3 Inquisition wanted to follow up with a conversation from last week about their CDX and 32X having issues. And luckily, it turns out the issue was the 32X, not the CDX. So it sucks that you still need to do some kind of work on your 32X, but those are going to be easier to replace than a CDX and much cheaper as well. Or you could just not use it for the short term and only use Genesis and Sega CD games. PS3 Inquisition actually has a backup 32X, which is working fine, so that's awesome. So that's very cool. I'm glad that that's all that was, and I'm glad that you're able to isolate the issue. I was nervous for you because CDXs are going to be harder to repair, but that's kind of cool. And if your 32X is having issues and you're looking to get rid of it, I'm looking to pick up a broken one pretty cheap for some testing and some other stuff that I've been working on. But if you wanted to keep it as a backup, then definitely look around for people who have a history of working on 32Xs and ask them to do a full refurbishing. Just note that those mushroom turds are never going to work perfectly all the time. They're just, maybe they did when they were new, but I just, since I started RetroRGB, I've never had any of the 32Xs I've owned work consistently. And I've probably owned 10 over the last 10 plus years, just buying and you know, and somebody needs them, so I'll sell the package to a friend at cost, buy new stuff, do more testing, and I've never had one that just worked every single time. There was always some weird issue with it, so you know, I don't know. It's up to you and what you want to do with that one. But I think there's a bunch of very good 32X games, and I'm glad that you still have interest in it. But I think you should have realistic expectations for their performance, which is bad. Well, that's it for this week. If you'd like to participate in these Q&As, ask any question you'd like wherever it is that you support. Please just ask in the latest Q&A post, because the way these services work, I can't really figure out what's an old question or a new question on an old post. Plus, as you saw today, I just like scrolling through in real time as if we were hanging out somewhere together. And anybody who supports it can feel free to ask. It's just very often we get only questions on Patreon, because that's where the majority of people are. But this is just a service anybody or any service you can just jump in and ask wherever you support. So thank you for everybody who supports in absolutely any way, including even just sharing and spreading word of what we do at RetroRGB. I really appreciate all of you. So thank you again, and I'll see you next week.